Rodney Stone by Sir Arthur Conan Doyle, dramatized for radio in four parts by Constance Cox, with Sean Arnold as Rodney Stone, Stuart Organ, Henry Stamper, Charlotte Mitchell, and John Rye. Rodney Stone, Part 1. In the year 1814, when England was at war with France, I was a boy of 16 and lived with my mother in a cottage at Friar's Oak in Sussex. My father was in the Navy, and I longed to join him, for all the Stones had been naval men. But my mother insisted I must complete my education first. So, what leisure time I had for my studies, I spent with my bosom friend, Jim Harrison, who worked at his uncle's smithy in the village.
Keep those bellows going, Jim. Don't let the fire get low.
Right, Uncle.
That's it, boy.
The Brighton Mail. Come and see it.
Nay, Master Rodney, that's not a Brighton Mail. It's a private coach for a party of young Corinthians. Been visiting the Prince of Brighton, I dare say.
Look at those horses. What would you give to drive a team like that, Jim?
Oh, more than I'll ever be worth, Roddy.
Look out, his whip.
Watch out with your whip, young master. You're not to be trusted on the box if you can't handle it better than that.
What's that you say?
I bid you have a care, master. Or there'll be some one-eyed folk along the road you drive.
Oh, you take that, do you? I'll have a little talk with you, my fine fellow.
That's it, Fred. Make him put up his hat and so on.
Knock some of the soot off him. Give the Johnny Roy's breakfast.
I'll pay you for your advice, my man. Put your hands up. I don't choose to hit a man who's unprepared.
Get back to your coach, sir. I'm not fighting you.
Perhaps my glove across your face will persuade him.
Don't strike me, master. You'll get pepper if you do.
Oh, Dad, I know you. You're champion Jack Harrison.
My name, master.
And I thought you were some Sussex jawbacon. Man, I haven't seen you since the day you nearly killed Black Baruch and cost me a cool 100 by doing it.
Lord Frederick was going to take on the ex-champion of England.
Give him one on the apron and see what happens.
I'll let you off this time, Harrison.
Thank you, sir.
So, this is where you finished up. What's this place called?
Friar's Oak, sir. It's quiet, but with what I save from the prize ring and what I make from the traffic on the Brighton Road, I get a living.
Well, the Prince is at Brighton in his new pavilion. He'd be glad to see you.
Oh, nay, sir. He'd never remember me.
Oh, don't you believe it. Would Prinny forget the ex-champion of England? Never. Why, you're only 7 miles out. You could walk to Brighton in 2 hours.
Ah, no doubt I could, sir. But I'll finish with boxing. My missus always hated it. Anyway, it's best for me to do nothing that might bring the old longing back.
Well, you know your own business best. Are these your two sons here?
I've no children, sir. This is young Rodney Stone, who lives hard by. And this is Jim, my nephew.
Your nephew, eh? Well, here's a guinea for you, Jim. You shall never say I robbed you of your uncle. You see my cattle? I shall make London under the 5 hours.
Yeah, they're a splendid beast, sir. Watch out for that whip. All ex-champions might be as easy-going as I am.
Hey, Jim.
What?
The guinea.
You've forgotten it.
Let it lie there. I'm not going to pick it up.
Is that you, Rodney?
Yes, Mother.
Here's a letter from your father.
Father? Is he coming home?
No, not yet, I'm afraid.
Oh. Has he been in another battle?
Yes. He was in an engagement in the Mediterranean, and although his ship was in the... Oh, what was the word he used?
The van?
Ah, yes, that's it. The van. It suffered no damage from the French guns.
And Father wasn't hurt?
Quite unhurt.
Oh.
He says Admiral Nelson had a special word for him after the engagement.
Oh, Mother, can't I go to sea very soon?
Rodney, you're only 16.
But lots of boys are midshipmen at my age. Father's a lieutenant. He could speak for me. I might get with Admiral Nelson.
You must finish your schooling first.
You don't need learning in the Navy.
When the time comes, you shall go, I promise.
Oh.
You shall make the Navy your profession, as all the Stones have done.
Hey, that's Jim. We're going on to the Downs to make an invasion bonfire. We've got a heap of sticks and grass ready. Do you think Napoleon will invade us?
God grant he never will.
Oh, it'd be a shame if we made that bonfire for nothing. To make such a lovely blaze.
Please, God, we'll light it for victory instead. Take your cap, Rodney.
I won't be late back.
Rodney.
Yes?
Rodney, dear, I know there's no one else for you to make a friend here but Jim. But don't let him go teaching you rough ways.
Oh.
Remember, there's a difference between you.
Jim isn't rough, and he's as good as I am.
No, dear, that's not true. No one knows anything about his parents.
His uncle was champion heavyweight of England, and he knew the Prince of Wales. The gentleman said so.
What gentleman?
The gentleman with the coach who threw him a guinea. And Jim was too proud even to pick it up.
Jim may have pride, dear, but it doesn't make up for the lack of respectable parentage.
Oh, mother.
All I ask is, don't let him teach you anything your father would be ashamed of.
Jim would never do that. I'm coming. Bye, Mother.
Hey, Roddy, I thought you were coming to help. You're leaving me to do all the work.
I won't be a minute. I'm finishing something I promised Mother I'd do for her.
Oh, what's that you're writing?
Ah, it's a family tree. It shows you who all your ancestors were.
Are all those yours?
Yes, I've only been able to go back as far as my great-great-grandfather. That's him, Vernon Stone, born 1634, died 1681.
What was he?
A sailor, of course. We've always been sailors. He fought in dozens of naval battles under Charles II. Now, this one, Hawkstone, was his eldest son.
Why have they all got such funny names?
They're not funny. They're the names of famous admirals. That's why my name's Rodney. And when I have a son, I shall call him Nelson.
Oh, it'll be wretched here when you go to sea, Roddy.
Oh, then why don't you come with me, Jim? We could join a ship together and...
No, I can't. I've got to be in my uncle's smithy. Besides, it wouldn't be the same for me as for you.
Why not?
Well, you'll go on to be an officer because you're a gentleman's son. I'm only a village lout. I'd never be anything more than a racing.
You're not a village lout, Jim.
Oh, I'm nothing any good, I know that. If I were, my uncle and aunt would tell me about my parents. But they shut up close as oysters when I ask, so it's pretty plain they were something to be ashamed of. If I'm to make a name in the world, I've got to do it on my own. That's clear enough. What's that?
Sounds like a dog.
Look, over there, that gypsy. Huh? He's thrashing the poor little lurcher.
No.
Come on.
Run away from me, would you, you vermin? I'll give you run away. Take that, you devil.
Don't, please. Stop it. It's hurting, no.
Get away from me, woman. I'll learn it this time, once and for all.
That's enough of that. What the devil? You'll not touch that dog again.
Who the hell are you interfering? Give me back that rope.
Leave that dog alone, then, or I'll use it on you.
You'll do what?
You heard me. Touch that dog again, and I'll knock you down.
You don't know what you're saying, boy. Get out of there before he kills you.
I'm not afraid of him. Are you going to give me your word to leave that dog alone?
You've got a bold tongue in you, young master. And what makes you think I'd take any notice of what you say?
Because if you don't, I'll make you.
Make me? Make me? Oh.
I'll fight you.
Fight me? You?
Please, please, young man, please go. You can't fight him. You don't know who he is.
I do know who he is.
Oh, you do you? Who am I, then?
You're Gypsy Lee, and you call yourself the Cock of the South Downs.
Gypsy Lee?
Your young companion seems to take me at my proper value. Yes, I'm Gypsy Lee, and I call myself the Cock of the South Downs because I am. Sure you still want to take me on, young shaver?
Yes. I know something of sparring, too.
Go home. Go home while you're still safe. Why, the mother's milk's not dry on you.
Now will you fight?
Strike me, would you? All right, then. You asked for it. Come on. Take your coat off.
Ben, really?
Stay quiet, woman.
Hold my coat for me, Roddy. Here, keep out of his reach, Jim. He's so big.
Oh, I know how to handle him.
Now, say your prayers, youngster. Because when I've done with you, your own mother ain't going to know you. Here's for a start.
It's a good punch, Lee, if it had landed.
Keep still, can't you? Let me hit you.
Watch out, Jim. Jim.
No, that weren't so funny, were it?
Jim, can you get up? I'm all right. Leave me alone.
Want some more, do you? All right, then. I'm your man.
Get your knife away, Jim. Keep him on the move. He's got bellows to mend already.
Oh, bellows to mend, are we? This is going to finish you, boy.
Watch it, Jim. Jim! Oh, Jim!
Well, Lee, have you had enough?
Jim, you fought like a champion.
How is he?
He can't speak, sir. You better go. Leave him to me.
Oh, won't he take it out on you?
Oh, don't worry about me, sir. I'm used to him. I can handle him, all right.
Oh, it's all right, old fellow. He won't touch you again in a hurry.
Hey, it's 5 o'clock. They'll be wondering where we've got to. Come on, Jim. Hit the coat. Hurry. I'll race you there.
All right. Come on.
Where's that young fireman? I ain't finished him off yet.
He's gone. And you can thank your lucky stars he has. He nigh on finished you off. Now, sit up. And I'll bathe your face.
Ah, there you are at last, Jim. I've been needing you to blow the bellows for me. It's been a mort of traffic on the Brighton Road, and shoes cost but a dozen.
Sorry, Uncle. I'll do it now.
Now, wait a minute, boy. What's happened to your face?
Oh, it's nothing. Just a bruise.
No small odd result of a blow to me. Master Rodney, have you been fighting with my nephew?
No, I couldn't hit him like that, Mr. Harrison, even if I wanted to.
Oh, I didn't think you could. There's weight and strength behind that. How did it happen, Jim?
Aren't you two coming into your meal yet?
Mercy on us, Jim. What have you been doing?
He's just about to tell me, missus. Let the lad speak. Well, Jim?
It was a fight, Uncle.
A fight? Oh, no.
Quiet now, missus.
No.
A gypsy was beating his dog. I went in and stopped him, that's all. Jim hasn't told you who it was. It was a man named Gypsy Lee who called himself the Cock of the South Downs.
You fought Gypsy Lee? He let you off light, I suppose.
No, he didn't. It was Jim who beat him. He knocked him right out.
Oh, no. But
how did you do it, boy? I never taught you.
Oh, I remembered a lot from listening to you talking about your old days in the ring. And Roddy and I sparred a bit between ourselves.
Oh, Jack, you must stop this. You mustn't
now
let
then,
it go.
Now then, old girl, I'll handle this. You get along. No. Yeah, do as I say.
Yes, well, you talk to him, Jack. You talk to him.
Now, yes. Jim, I've told you before. I don't want you following in my footsteps.
I don't see why not. You were champion of England.
And I nearly killed a man in a ring. Don't forget that. I don't know what it was like for me, Jim. Those days and weeks when he hung between life and death. And every minute I thought I'd feel the hand of a Bow Street runner on my shoulder for murder. That's what made me give it up in the end.
Well, that might not happen to me.
I'm not saying it would, Jim. If you were my son, I might feel different. But you're not. And I have a duty to you. I promise your father I'd bring you up in this trade, and I mean to keep my word to him.
But there are famous men in the boxing profession. You said so yourself.
Jim.
Men like Gentleman Jackson and John Gully.
Your father isn't ashamed of the profession, Jim.
Isn't? Do you mean my father's alive?
I should have said wasn't, lad. Just a slip of the tongue. But it wouldn't be right for you.
But, Uncle...
I've said my last word, Jim. Now let me hear no more of it. But there's one thing I will do. So you don't take another blow like that. I'll teach you to hold up your hands to anything in the South Country.
You'll teach me to fight properly?
Yes, but only for your own protection. You're not to think of professional milling. Now then, put up your hands, and I'll give you your first lesson.
Oh, Uncle.
Now, stand on the balls of your feet, boy, so you can move fast. That's it. Now, forward again, on this one. Now.
Already. Ah. That's done.
Finished your homework already, Rodney?
Yes. Well, all but the Latin, and I can do that tomorrow. I'm going to Cliff Royal with Jim. We're going to set some snares for rabbits.
You won't stay out too late, will you?
It's not a pleasant place to be after dark.
Don't worry, Mother. I'd rather walk past a gibbet on Ditchling Common than Cliff Royal after dark.
Goodness, how you've grown out of that coat these last 6 months.
Well, I'm 6 months older.
Such good cloth, too. Now we should get you another, I can't think.
Well, if we get a lot of rabbits, I could sell some to the butcher.
Oh, no, dear. No.
But why?
People must not know that things are difficult.
Oh, Mother, that's ridiculous.
We shall manage somehow. There's Jim.
Oh, good.
Let him in while I take these things into the kitchen.
All right. Come in, Jim.
Hello, Robbie.
Hello.
Good evening, Jim.
Good evening, Mrs. Stone. Have you got the wires?
Yes, I made 2 dozen. Here, you take half.
Thank you. Well, we ought to get a lot of rabbits up at Cliff Royal because nobody ever goes near there.
Ruddy, have you heard that Cliff Royal is haunted?
Of course I have. Everybody knows that.
Whose ghost is it supposed to be?
Well, the man who was murdered, I suppose.
Ah, was there a murder there?
Yes, didn't you know?
No. I asked my uncle to tell me the story and he wouldn't.
Oh, that's because your uncle's best friend was concerned in it. I don't suppose he wanted to talk about his disgrace.
My uncle's best friend?
Yes.
Well, how do you know all about it?
I heard my mother and the vicar discussing it the other day. I was in the kitchen, but they left the door open.
Ah, well, tell me the story, Ruddy.
Yes. Well, it all happened about 14 years ago. Lord Avon was the owner of Cliff Royal. He was your uncle's best friend.
Lord Avon was?
Yes. My mother said he used to be your uncle's patron when he boxed in the prize ring.
Oh, I see. Well, go on, Ruddy.
Well, Lord Avon had asked 3 of his London friends to come down and spend a few days with him at Cliff Royal. One of them was my mother's brother, Sir Charles Tregellis. That's how she knows all about it. Then there was Sir Lothian Hume, Lord Avon's nephew, and Captain Barrington, Lord Avon's younger brother.
And those were the 4 that were there when the murder was committed?
Yes. Well, when they'd all arrived, they sat down and started to play cards for money. They went on playing for 2 whole days and a night. Lord Avon lost, Sir Lothian Hume lost, and my uncle lost, and Captain Barrington won until he couldn't win any more.
Did he win all their money?
Not only their money, but he won from his elder brother some papers that meant a great deal to him. On Monday night, they stopped playing at last and all went to bed. The next morning, they found Captain Barrington dead in his room, with his throat cut.
Had his brother killed him?
Well, they thought so, because he fled from the house and disappeared. He's never been heard of since.
I wonder if it's true.
Well, of course it's true. My mother said so.
No, I mean about the ghost.
Oh.
Roddy, will you come with me tonight and look for it?
Look for the ghost?
Yes. Slip out when your mother's in bed. I'll wait for you at the smithy.
But supposing we see it?
Well, what if we do? Won't hurt us. Ghosts only walk through you.
All right. What time?
When it strikes 10 by the church clock. Come on, we'll lay our snares first.
All right.
We're going now, Mrs. Stone.
Goodbye, Jim. Don't keep Roddy out too late.
We're lucky. There's a moon.
Only a little one.
Oh, not to see by, anyway. Not far now, Roddy. There it is.
Jim, it looks a horrible place.
Oh, only because it's been deserted for years. We'll be able to get inside.
Oh, don't let's try, Jim. Let's go back.
What? Let me come all this way? Come on, Jim. We're in luck, buddy. Here's one of the windows open.
But it looks haunted, Jim. Let's go back.
Not lightly.
Look, there's nothing to be afraid of,
Roddy. I'll help you in first.
No, you go first.
All right. Give me a leg. Right, I'm in. Give me your hands.
I'll strike a light. I brought a bit of candle with me. Here.
Hold the candle steady.
Yes.
Now we can look around.
Oh. Jim, look! What? This must be the very room where they played cards. Jim, look at that table. The cards are still there.
There must be 40 packs at least. They must have played and played.
For 2 days and a night. Oh, I wonder where my uncle sat. And Lord Avon.
There's a staircase here.
Oh, don't go up there.
Why not?
It must lead to the room of the murder. The vicar said they saw on the ceiling.
Jim! You can see it even now. The bloodstain. I believe you're right. What's that?
Someone's coming down the stairs. As I watched, terrified, I saw a figure dimly outlined in the corner upon which the stair opened. There was a silence in which I could hear my heart thumping. Then when I looked again, the figure was gone, and the low creak, creak was heard again upon the stairs. Jim sprang after it, and I was left half fainting in the moonlight. But not for long. Jim was down again in a minute, and he half led, half carried me out of the house.
Can you stand, Roddy?
Yes, but I'm shaking. So am I. I never believed such things before. I know better now.
Was it a man, Jim, do you suppose?
No, it was a ghost, all right.
How do you know?
Because I followed it. It turned clean into a wall and disappeared.
Jim,
what?
Listen.
What? Something's coming up the drive.
Shh, quiet, Roddy.
Whatever it is this time, I'll get my arms around it.
What the deuce?
You're not a ghost anyway.
You're not the little people, Matt.
Uncle!
Why, I blessed his boy Jim. And Master Rodney, too, as I'm a living sinner. What in the name of wonder are you two doing up here this time of night?
We're exploring.
Exploring, are you? Well, I don't think either of you were meant to be Captain Cooks by the look of your faces. Why, Jim? What are you afraid of?
I'm not afraid, Uncle. Only spirits are new to me.
Spirits?
We've been inside the house, sir, and we saw the ghost.
Oh, so that's the game, is it? Did you have speech with it?
Well, I tried to, but it vanished.
Yes, well, I've heard there's something of that sort up here. But it's not the thing I'd advise you to meddle with, Jim. And as for young Master Rodney, if his mother saw that white face of his, she'd never let him come to the smithy more. Now, you wait here for me, and I'll see you back to Friar's Oak.
Uncle.
Oh?
What brings you to Cliff Royal, anyway?
What brings me? Jim, lad, as a man gets on in years, as many a duty turns up in the likes of you have no idea of. So ask me no more. I won't be long.
What did he mean, Jim? I don't know. And did you see?
Huh?
He was carrying a bundle.
Bundle?
No. He said he had a duty. Now, what duty could he have that brings him to Cliff Royal at dead of night?
2 years after our adventure at Cliff Royal, a peace was ratified with Napoleon, much to my annoyance, for I still hoped the war would last long enough for me to join in. Other than that, nothing happened, except that I grew another 4 inches, and Jim Harrison shot up lithe and strong like a young tree.
That's a good piece of work, Jim.
Quick and skillful, too.
Oh.
As for the strength of you, why, 2 years ago, this was all gristle. Now your muscles are set in.
Oh, you can still beat me at sparring, Uncle.
Aye, but I'd have me work cut out, lad. What's this? More business for us?
Sounds like it. Nope, not for us. It's the postboy stopping at the stones.
Oh, I hope there's not a miss. Go over there, Jim. If it's bad news, there may be something we can do to help.
I'll get some of this grime off first.
Right, lad. Hey, you're quite a dandy. Time was when you dashed across, sir, never caring if you was black as a sweet.
Oh, it's only that even in these small ways, I feel the need to try and better myself.
Aye, lad. That's right and proper. And cleanliness is next to godliness, that a good book says. But make haste, lad. Mrs. Stone may be feeling the need of a friendly word.
Oh, Mother, it's good news. There's nothing to cry about.
I know. It's silly of me. Oh, Roddy, is the banner ready? Where did I put it?
It's in the chest where it always is, and it's been ready for more than a year, ever since we heard that Father might be coming home.
He is coming this time. He does really say so.
It's there. Look, our ships have left the Mediterranean, and I should be with you by the end of 6 weeks.
And two of them have gone already while this letter was on its way.
Yes.
Oh, Roddy, there's so much to do.
Steady, Mother. There's plenty of time.
And now there's someone at the door. You see who it is.
Yes, Mother.
I can't go with my eyes red like this.
Oh, hello, Jim. Come in.
Thanks, Roddy. We saw the postboy come, Mrs. Stone. It's not
Bad news, I hope.
Oh, no, Jim, only the best I could possibly hear. My husband will be home at the end of the month.
Oh, I'm very glad, Mrs. Stone. And my uncle says if there's anything
I
can
do... Oh, no, Jim, thank you. There's nothing. But tell him how grateful I am for his kindly thought. Oh. Robbie, get out the banner. I must have it ironed and ready.
Banner?
It's to welcome home my father.
Oh, well, I'll be going then. May I tell my uncle your good news, Mrs. Stone?
Of course you may, Jim. Oh, it's quite crumpled. And do you think it's long enough?
Well, we've measured it often enough. It goes exactly across the two lilac bushes outside.
But they may have grown.
Oh, Mother.
Perhaps we should try it again outside. Let's see now. Bring it here, dear. Good gracious.
What is it?
In that pony and trap.
What?
What a vulgar-looking woman.
She's swaying about on the seat. Can she be ill?
Heaven forgive me if I misjudge her, but I think the unfortunate woman has been drinking.
She stopped at the smithy. Well, who is she? I've never seen her before.
She's surely not the person who's taken the cottage at the end of the village. Rodney, go and find out. Mr. Harrison may know.
Oh, what do we do if she is? Ask her to go away?
Rodney! But go along, hurry.
Oh, very well. Jim! Hello, Roddy. I thought you were busy with your preparations.
My mother sent me over to ask you who the person is. Talking to your uncle.
Oh, no idea. She just stopped here and called my uncle out to her.
She's looking at you. I think she wants to speak to you.
To me? What on earth can she have to say to me?
Jim! Come here a minute!
Yes, Uncle? You wanted me, Uncle?
This is Jim, is it?
Yes, Mom.
Oh. I hope you are well, Jim.
Well, yes, Mom. Very well.
And happy, Jim. There's nothing you crave for.
No, Mom. Thank you. I've everything I need.
Yes, that'll do, Jim. Get back to your work, lad.
Yes, Uncle.
What did you want?
I don't know. She just asked me a couple of questions, that's all. Oh, I'd better get on with this.
Jim, stop that a minute. I've something to say to you. Jim, that was Miss Hinton who's come to live at the Maples, out Hempstead Crossway. She wants you to go and see her.
To go and see her?
Well, maybe she can help you on a bit. I promise you'll go and see her tomorrow.
Oh, but I don't want her help, Uncle, and I don't want to see her.
Now, Jim, I'll give you my word, and you wouldn't want to make me out a liar. She only wants to talk to you a bit, for it's a lonely life she leads, poor soul.
What would she want to talk to such as me about?
Why, as to that, I can't say. But she seemed mighty set on it. She said Master Rodney could go with you if you liked.
Well, all right, I'll go. If you'll come too, Roddy.
Of course I will.
Well, she'll be glad to see you both. It's not much company she has these days.
Had you known her before, Uncle?
Oh, aye, on and off. Though many years ago.
What did you mean when you said she might better my fortune?
I've told you all I can tell you, Jim, so that's enough. And now we've got work to do. Blow up the fire, lad. It's nigh on dead.
All right, Uncle.
It was a good 4 miles of a walk to Anstey Cross. But when we reached it, you could not hope to see a more cosy little house, all honeysuckle and creepers, with a wooden porch and lattice windows. A cross-looking woman opened the door to us.
Miss Hinton is expecting us. No.
Is she so? Then I'm afraid she can't see you.
But she asked us to come. I'm Jim Harrison.
I can't help who you are. I tell you, she can't see you.
We've come a long way. Well, maybe you just tell her we're here.
Tell her? How am I to tell her when she couldn't as much as hear a pistol in her ears? Here, step inside if you don't believe me.
Thank you, Mum. Thank you.
Now, tell her yourself, if you've a mind to.
She threw open a door as she spoke. The sound of dreadful swine-like breathing fell upon our ears. And there, in a reclining chair at the further end of the room, we caught a glimpse of a figure all humped together, huge and shapeless, with tails of black hair hanging down. It was but a glance, and then we were off hot foot for home. Jim was silent for a long while, but when I glanced at his face to see how he took it, he was looking quite white and ill.
You're not to tell anyone, Roddy. I shall say she was ill. My mother said she was drunk when she called at the smithy. Was she? I never marked it. I know she had kind eyes and a kind heart. I saw one in the other when she looked at me. Oh, maybe it's the want of a friend that's driven her to this.
But this was not to be our last memory of Miss Hinton. Before the week was out, a message came that Jim and I were to go up to the house again.
There's no sign of them yet, Ellen. Oh, you don't think they mean to disappoint me, do you?
Oh, it wouldn't surprise me, Mum. What else can you expect from a couple of country louts?
It's only just after three, and it is a 3-mile walk. Have we provided enough to eat, you think?
A platoon of soldiers wouldn't go hungry with this lot. I'll tell you this, Mum. If they don't come, you and me will be eating cakes and buttered muffins every meal for a week. And you better go easy on the brandy, Mum. I don't want you on my hands again today. Yesterday was bad enough.
No, it's only to steady my nerves, Ellen.
And you've steadied them twice already. Still, you must do as you please, I suppose. I can always tell them you can't see them.
Oh, no, Ellen, no. I'll put it away. They've come! Oh, Ellen, let them in, quickly.
Very well, Mum.
Perhaps if I had just a little nip. No. No, I mustn't.
Your visitors, Mum.
Good day to you, Miss Hinton.
Oh, Jim. It is indeed good of you to come and see a lonely old woman. Thank you. Thank you for coming.
When am I to serve tea, Mum?
Later, Ellen, later.
Oh, very well.
Ellen is rather cross, I'm afraid, but she looks after me very well, and sometimes I fear I am a trial to her. Oh, won't you tell me the name of your friend?
This is Rodney Stone, Mum.
You are very welcome, Rodney, if I may call you, sir.
Yes, ma'am, of course.
Thank you. Now, come and sit down, both of you. Jim, sit here by me.
Oh, thank you, Mum.
You must let me know you, and know you well. Your uncle and aunt are old acquaintances of mine.
You've known them long, Mum?
Oh, for many years, Jim. I held you in my arms when you were a child, although you don't remember me. How old are you now?
18.
Yes. Yes, it would be about 18 years ago. See how my hands are twitching. Your coming has excited me, and any excitement makes me nervous. Look round at my books and pictures while I take a little of my medicine.
Thank you. Oh, Jim.
Well, don't you think I have some pretty things?
Oh, yes, indeed, ma'am. I wish my mother had as pretty.
And which do you think is the prettiest of all?
Oh, that picture, ma'am, of the beautiful young girl.
Oh, you like that best, do you? I'm glad of that.
Who is she, ma'am?
It says underneath, walk up and read it.
Oh, thank you, ma'am. Miss Polly Hinton as Peggy in The Country Wife, played for her benefit at the Haymarket Theatre, September the 18th, 1782.
Well, now, don't you know who it is? Why, where are your eyes?
It's not you, Mum.
Of course it is. I was Miss Polly Hinton of the Haymarket Theatre.
You were a play actress, ma'am?
Oh, don't say it in that tone of voice, as if a play actress weren't as good as anybody else. Oh,
Jim, I wish you had been in the theatre that night. The prince himself and four dukes in the foxes and all the wits and macaronis in London rising at me from the pit. Why, if Lord Aidan hadn't given me a cast in his carriage, I should never have got all my flowers back to my lodgings. And now, two country lads are sitting in judgment on me. Is that how you've been brought up, Jim? To think evil of what you don't understand?
I'm sorry, Mum. I didn't mean to hurt you. And I'm sorry I didn't know at first that was you in the picture.
I don't blame you for that, Jim. We grow old and we change. Not always for the better. But have you never seen a play?
No.
Nor you, Rodney?
No, ma'am. Though my mother's told me how she used to like them.
Well, I'm not in voice. And it's ill to play in a little room with but two for an audience, but I'll do my best. I'll sit over there.
Are you going to act for us, ma'am?
Just a speech, my dear, from one of the parts I used to play. Now, you must imagine me to be the Queen of the Peruvians, captured by Pizarro, the Spanish leader, and awaiting death in the presence of her conquerors. Yes, a guard. I call them too. And soon I know they'll lead me to my death. But think not, Pizarro. The fury of thy flashing eyes shall awe me for a moment. Nor think that woman's anger or the feelings of an injured heart prompted me to this design. No! Had I been only influenced so, thus...
And straight away that coarse, swollen woman became a queen. The grandest, haughtiest queen that you could dream of. And she turned upon us with such words of fire, such lightning eyes, that she held us spellbound. And I asked nothing more than to run out of the cottage there and then and die in the cause of my country. Then in an instant she changed. She was a poor woman now who had lost her only child and was bewailing it. Her voice was full of tears, and what she said was so simple, so true, that we both seemed to see the dead babe stretched there on the carpet before us.
Fiend-like arts by which this hypocrite first undermined the virtue of a guileless heart. How even in the pious sanctuary wherein I dwelt, by corruption and fraud, he practiced upon those in whom I most confided, till my distempered fancy led me, step by step, into the abyss of guilt. How did you like that, then?
Oh, it was wonderful, Miss Hinton.
Aye, that was my way in the days when Sarah Siddons would turn green at the name of Polly Hinton.
And you play no longer, Mum?
No, Jim. No, I left the boards when I was weary of them. And all this talking makes one dry. I think I must have my medicine again.
Please, don't.
What?
It's brandy, isn't it?
Am I to have none, Jim?
You were so glorious just now. Don't make yourself like...
Like you saw me the first time. I've taken it for so long, but... All right. There, Jim. Will that satisfy you? It's so long since anyone cared whether I drank or not.
You're too good and kind for that.
Good? Good? Well, I love that you should think me so. But if you want to keep me from the brandy, Jim, you must do something for me in return.
What can I do?
Swear you'll come and see me, rain or shine, blow or snow, twice a week, that I may see you and speak to you.
Of course I'll come, whatever happens.
And you'll help me fight the other, Jim. It'll be hard for me.
I'll help in every way I can.
Oh.
If I keep these muffins any longer, they'll be like leather. And here's the tea.
Thank you, Ellen. Draw up chairs, both of you.
Thank you, Miss Hinton.
And you must eat everything up. Or Ellen swears she'll feed me on it till it's gone. And that would be worse for me than the other. Come along now. Let me see you start.
Thank you.
Rodney, can't you see it yet?
No, Mother.
I was sure I heard the sound of horses.
Wait a minute. Yes, there's a post chaise coming round the corner. It's going to stop here.
Yes, it is. Oh, Rodney, it must be your father.
Mary!
It is Father!
Oh, Anson! Oh,
Father!
Anson!
Mary, my love. My dear love.
Oh, Anson. Roddy, dear.
Hmm?
Here's your father.
Oh, welcome home, Father.
Why, Rodney, lad, you were but a child when we last met, and now, bless my heart, you're in need of a razor. Oh, I'm right glad to see you, dear lad. And as for you, sweetheart...
Anson, all the folk are looking at us. Come inside.
I'll bring the luggage.
Anson,
yeah?
You're limping.
Oh, it's nothing, lass. Only the bone of my leg. I got it broken the day, but the surgeon spliced it together, though it's a bit of a crank here. Oh. Bless me, if you haven't turned from pink to white. Why, you can see for yourself. It's nothing.
Oh, Father. Sit you down, Anson. Here in your old armchair.
Well, well. It's the same as ever. And here are my two loved ones. Good luck, I say, to the carronade that sent me into so snug a harbour without fear of sailing orders.
And here's your pipe, Anson.
Ah.
Let me see you sitting and smoking it as you did in the old days.
Thank you, my love. Well, Roddy, you're getting a man now.
Oh, Father.
I suppose you'll go afloat soon, like the rest of us.
Yes.
And leave me without a son as well as a husband?
Ah, well, there's time enough for that yet, my dear. And they're more inclined to empty berths than fill them now the peace has come. But you've had a deal of schooling, so I hear of it.
Oh, quite enough, Father.
We'll see what all your learning's done for you. Do you think you could tot up the amount of my prize money?
Prize money?
I have a tidy bit to come.
Oh.
And it's all in your lap, Mary, my love.
Oh, thank God.
Have things been hard for you?
A little.
It shall all be made up to you, lass. By George. When this leg of mine's sound, we'll all bear down to Brighton for a spell. Oh. And if there's a smarter frock than yours on the steen, may I never tread poop again. And as for you, Roddy, Lord Nelson has promised me a vacancy.
Oh, Father.
And he'll be as good as his word, although it may not come for a few months yet.
Anson, I hope you'll not be angry with me.
How could I, my love?
I've done something unbeknown to you about Roddy.
About me?
Yes. I wrote to my brother, Sir Charles Tregellis. I told him Roddy was growing a man now, but thinking since Charles has no wife or child of his own, he might be disposed to help him.
We need none of his help, Mary. Roddy has his sea chest and kit. He needs no more.
But Charles has power and influence in London. He could make Ruddy known to all the great people. Let me read you his letter.
Very well.
My dear sister Mary, in answer to your letter, let me assure you I am by no means wanting in those finer feelings which are the chief adornments of humanity. I am most interested in what you tell me of my nephew Rodney, and as I shall be visiting the Prince at Brighton next week, I shall break my journey at Friar's Oak for the purpose of seeing you both. At the present moment, I lie abed, having stayed late at the Marchioness of Dover's ball last night, and this is writ to my dictation by Ambrose, my valet. I am ever, dear sister Mary, your brother, Charles Tregellis. Anson, what do you think of that?
I think it's the letter of a fop. And we can very well do without him.
You'll think better of him when you know him, Anson.
Well, we'll wait and see what he has to say. If he can do aught for Roddy, well, I won't stand in his way.
When does your uncle come, Roddy?
This week. Any day now. Oh, Jim, if he should take me to London with him to meet the great people. I'd be sorry to leave you, Jim, but...
Oh, don't be sorry for that. I'd do it if I had your chance. I find it bitter enough here at times.
You've got your trade, Jim.
Oh, my trade.
I forge a shoe, I clip it, I coke it, I knock five holes in it. And when it's finished, I do it all over again. Do you think that's all I was born into the world for?
Why don't you join the Navy with me, Jim?
Oh, listen, Roddy. I met a poor sailor at the inn here once. His back was cut into red diamonds from the bosun's whip. That's not for me. I was born to be my own master. And there's only one place I can hope to be so.
Where do you mean, Jim?
London. Miss Hinton's told me all about it. Till I feel I could find my way through it from end to end. I know where the playhouses are, where the king's house is, and the prince's, and the place where the fighting men live.
But, Jim...
I could make my name known in London.
But how?
Never mind how. But I could do it. And I will, too. One of these days, I'll go and seek my fortune there. And when I come back to Friar's Oak, it'll be in such a style as that fine gentleman yonder.
Jim, it must be my uncle. He stopped his curricle outside our door.
Permit me to compliment you, my dear Mary. The country air has used you wondrous well.
Oh,
I should be proud to be seen with my pretty sister in the mall.
It's a pleasure to welcome you here, Charles. You remember Anson?
I'm your servant, sir.
Sir?
Only last week I had the pleasure of dining with Lord St. Vincent. And I may tell you, your name is not forgotten of the Admiralty.
Sir.
Ah, and this, I take it, is my nephew.
Yes, this is Rodney. Your Uncle Charles, Rodney.
How do you do, sir?
Yes, I find him very passable, Mary, very passable indeed. Yes, I think he may do very well. And he's dressed more like a Christian.
Your pardon, Sir Charles.
Yes, Ambrose, what is it?
Shall I take this to your bedroom?
Ah, yes, do so, Ambrose. Would you show him where I'm to sleep, Mary? Place it safely, Ambrose, whatever you do.
Will you come this way, please?
Have you something of value in there, sir?
Oh, beyond all price, my dear Lieutenant. That is my battery de toilette. I never let it out of my sight. I shall never forget the agonies I once suffered through doing so. I was compelled to wear the same ruffles on two consecutive occasions. A pinch of snuff, sir.
Oh, thank you.
You number yourself among an illustrious company, Lieutenant, by dipping your finger and thumb into my box. Only four. Outside ourselves have had access to it. The Prince, of course, Mr. Pitt, the Prime Minister, the French Ambassador, and Lord Hawksley, though I have sometimes thought I was premature with Lord Hawksley.
You draw your line, I, sir.
I do. I wish no better epitaph on my tombstone. A woman has her love to bestow, a man his snuffbox. Neither should be lightly offered. Ah, Ambrose, go and bring in the lunch basket.
Yes, Sir Charles.
Forgive my apparent grossness, Mary, in bringing my own larder with me.
Of course.
But Abernethy has me under his orders, and a little white wine and the wing of a partridge are all he'll allow me. I felt they might be difficult to obtain in a little place like this.
But this isn't your first visit to Friar's Oak, is it, sir?
No, nephew. But it's my first for 17 years. I last stayed at Cliff Royal with the unfortunate Lord Avon on the occasion when he was accused of murdering his younger brother, Captain Barrington.
Is it quite certain he did it, Charles?
I don't know, Mary. He was my closest friend, and I would have said he was incapable of such a crime, but sometimes I think it was his pride which drove him to do it. Pride turned to madness that we should have lost such sums in his house. You heard that the money we'd all lost was returned to us?
No. I knew nothing of that. I knew, of course, that you'd been playing cards for 3 days and lost.
All of us lost, to Captain Barrington. Lord Avon, Sir Lothian Hume, and myself. But Lord Avon more than any. When at length we had no more to lose, we went to bed. I was restless and sleepless. I went over the play of the cards again and again in my mind, when suddenly I heard a cry and then a second louder one coming from the direction of Captain Barrington's room. Then steps in the corridor. I opened the door of my room and looked out. Lord Avon was walking away from his brother's room, a heavy bag in his hand that chinked as he walked.
The money?
Yes, nephew, as it transpired. The money. Next morning, I awoke to find him standing by my bed. Charles, he said, I can't bear to think you should have lost money in my house. You'll find it all returned upon this table. I protested that since I'd lost, I must be permitted to pay, but he would hear none of it.
And did Sir Lothian receive his money back as well?
So he told me when we met at breakfast. We were discussing the matter and eager to see Captain Barrington when I happened to glance up at the ceiling. And...
what, Charles?
There was a great crimson stain upon it.
Oh.
We rushed upstairs to Barrington's room and found him lying dead with his throat cut. Lord Avon's hunting knife was beside him. A lace ruffle was clenched in his hand. It was Lord Avon's. Papers were found, charred in the grate. They were Lord Avon's, too. You asked me if I was certain he did it, Mary. I wish to God I could believe there was a doubt.
Lord Avon fled, I understand, before he could be taken.
Yes. Where, heaven knows. Sir Lothian Hume is next of kin, but until they can prove Lord Avon dead, he can touch neither the title nor the estate.
No wonder it's such a horrible house. I've always hated the sight of it.
17 years have gone by, Mary. By now, perhaps even that ghastly ceiling...
It still has the stain, sir. I've seen it. Jim and I explored there once, and we saw the ghost as well.
The ghost?
It's reputed to be haunted, Charles.
Jim tried to follow it, but it vanished through a wall.
What part of the wall? Mm-hmm. What part?
Ambrose, what the devil do you mean, coming in suddenly like that?
Oh, I beg your pardon, Sir Charles. I came in to ask if you had any further orders for me, and I'm afraid I was somewhat carried away by what the young gentleman was saying. You'll forgive me, I'm sure, when you remember in what relation I stood to Lord Avon.
We must make allowances for him, Mary. He was very to Lord Avon before he came to me, and he was, I know, devoted to his master. But let us talk of more cheerful things. You, nephew, I understand, would like to see a little of the world.
Oh, more than anything, sir.
Then you shall. I go to Brighton tomorrow to visit the prince. You shall come with me and be presented to him.
Presented to the prince?
Well, don't be too excited, nephew. He's only a man like other men, though somewhat greater in bulk than most. Then I return to London for a season there, contentor.
Oh, if you would be so good, sir.
I shall look forward to your company. And now, Mary, if you'll forgive me, I'll retire to my room. I'm somewhat ravaged by your Sussex roads and need a lavender bath to restore me. I'll be with you again within 2 hours.
Tomorrow? And there's all these things to be packed and ready. Anson, come and help me.
Oh, in a minute, lass. In a minute. Well, Roddy, lad.
Oh, Father.
It's a great chance for you. A greater one than I can give you. Make the most of it.
Oh, I've looked at that road so often, and the coaches on it.
And tomorrow you'll be driving along it yourself, behind as fine a pair of horses as any in the country.
Oh, first to Brighton, and then to London.
That was part one of Rodney Stone by Sir Arthur Conan Doyle, with Sean Arnold as Rodney Stone, Stuart Organ as Jim, Henry Stamper as Champ Harrison, Charlotte Mitchell as Mrs. Harrison, and John Rye as Sir Charles. Anson Stone was played by Peter Woodthorpe in place of Michael Spice, who was indisposed. Jill Borken played Miss Hinton, Jean Trend, Mrs. Stone, and Michael Bilton, Ambrose. The part of Sir Frederick was played by James Carey, Gypsy Lee by James Bryce, and Gypsy Woman and Ellen by Hilda Schroeder. The director was David Johnston.